This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A little later, we're going to take a closer look at an investigation of the FDA, which claims the agency buries evidence of medical fraud and misconduct. But first, since 2011, California has been in the grips of one of the worst droughts in recent history. The drought has been shrinking drinking water reserves, intensifying wildfires, and so far has cost billions of dollars in agricultural losses. But all of that may be just a drop in the bucket, so to speak. Scientists say as we head towards the end of the century, the Southwest and the Plain States may be facing global warming-driven mega droughts, droughts worse than any drought of the past 1,000 years. The results were published this week in the journal Science Advances. What will they do for water? Jason Smerdon is a co-author on that paper. He's an associate research professor at Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory at Columbia University. He joins us in our CUNY New York studios. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you, Ira. It's a pleasure to be here.
What is a mega drought? What is that?
Yeah, mega droughts are mega because of several characteristics. And so we've characterized these in the past as things that happened toward the end of the first millennium and beginning of the second. And they're mega because they last for a very long time. So these droughts lasted for several decades. And they were also very severe. And they had fairly large spatial extents. So they really affected large regions of the U.S. western areas.
So we can expect a mega drought from, 2050 to 2100? Is that the projection?
Well, what we did is we actually connected two things, two sources of information. So we use climate models to project the future under different kinds of greenhouse gas emission scenarios. And it's actually, this has been known for more than a decade now, that as a consequence of increasing greenhouse gases, the western United States is expected to dry. So that's been well known, and that's something that was corroborated by our results in this study. The other thing that we knew was that these mega droughts existed in the past. And so what we did with our data was to say, all right, we know it's going to dry into the future. How does that compare to these past mega droughts? And we looked at this through a statistical analysis. And what we found was surprising for those of us on the study, as well as the scientific community in looking back on this, the dryness periods into the future in the Southwest and the Great Plains actually look worse than these mega drought periods.
And the upcoming prediction is because of global warming?
It's absolutely because of global warming. So what we do with these climate model projections is to impose changes in greenhouse gases based on assumptions about how the future is going to look. So it's based on assumptions about how the population is going to change, what kind of energy we're going to have, how efficiently we use it, how countries will continue to modernize, et cetera. And so we make assumptions about what those kinds of choices will mean for emission scenarios into the future. We looked at two different scenarios, one which is a business as usual scenario where greenhouse gases continue to increase through the 21st century, reaching levels over 1,000 parts per million in the atmosphere. Currently, we have about 400 parts per million. And we also looked at another scenario where we sort of peak in our emissions mid-century and then decline through the latter half of the 21st century. But because we're still continuing to emit, of course, CO2 goes up in that scenario as well and reaches upwards of about 650 parts per million relative to present day levels.
Mm-hmm. So what actually physically is going to happen to the weather patterns or the climate to make the climate change like that?
So there are two things that really cause the dryness in these regions. In the Southwest, it's changing precipitation patterns, so reductions in precipitation, as well as the ambient warming, which is on the other side of the supply and demand moisture balance. So reductions in precipitation reduce supply, and then evaporation, because of increasing temperatures, takes more moisture out of the soil. And so in the Southwest, it's both declining precipitation and increasing evaporative demands. In the Great Plains, it's more of a warming-only story. In fact, for some regions of the Great Plains, it actually the precipitation goes up slightly, but the evaporation overwhelms the slight increases in precipitation.
You know, it's always been said that because of global warming, the wet get wetter and the dry get drier. So what's the wet get? Is us here, we here in the east, with the snow and everything, we're going to get more precipitation while they get less?
So the east, that's part of the story. So what that is referring to is really the changing circulation patterns in the atmosphere. And part of that story relates to why the northern part of the Great Plains actually get a little bit more precipitation. But the rest of that story, in addition to the precipitation changes, is the drying as a result of the evaporation. And so that's in some regions, even though it might be a wet region getting wetter, there's also this evaporation that actually swings the state to a drier condition.
Mm-hmm. And so there's going to be a huge water shortage than in these states, one would expect, if they're having trouble with water now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the analogy to really appeal to. So if you think about our vulnerabilities to these kinds of droughts, you don't have to look much farther than what the West has seen over the last 10 or 15 years. Different regions of the West have been in fairly prolonged droughts, and that's meant already huge impacts on our economy, our food supply, our recreation, all of these things that are related to water supplies. Now just imagine those continuing for multiple decades and what that means for the water resources that we have and are already in short supply.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that we've had mega droughts in previous history. They were not due to global warming.
No, that was due to these were droughts that happened as much as 1,000 years ago, and so they were during a warm period of time known as the medieval climate anomaly. Mm-hmm. But they were more associated with natural cycles. Obviously, we weren't emitting the kinds of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere then like we are now. But these droughts did occur, and they've for long been a serious concern about whether or not they could come back.
And so you've made the projection. Give us the probability of it happening in 2050, 2020.
Well, so what we did in the paper was to actually look at the probability of a 35-year drought at the end of the 20th century, so 1950 to 2000, and how that probability changed at the end of the 21st century. And if we look in the climate model simulations at the end of the 20th century, the probability is about 10% or less that we would have a 35-year mega drought. By the end of the 21st century, so the latter half, the probability goes above 80% that we would expect to have one of these kinds of droughts.
80%?
80%.
Well, people who are hearing this for the first time, saying 80% chance of having a mega drought by, starting in 2050, they're going to be wondering whether they should move anywhere, I would imagine. If I'm in the bullseye of that drought,
hey,
what do I do?
These personal decisions are up to each of us. But, in terms of the on-the-ground stakeholders in these regions, I think there's some serious questions to ask about how we are going to deal with these kinds of changes coming down the pipeline and what kinds of adaptation strategies we're going to adopt to deal with these much more significant water shortages.
Because when people talk about mitigating carbon emissions now, you always hear the debate, especially politicians saying, well, it's going to cost a lot of money to do that. I don't want, taxpayers are going to pay for it. But if we don't do something now, we're going to pay for it later, right?
Absolutely. If we don't pay for it now, we're going to pay for it later. And a lot of the economic analyses suggest that paying for it now saves us money in the long term relative to just continuing with business as usual and making the, charging the expenses required to make these adaptations down the line.
Will there be any signs that the drought is coming first? Will it just creep up on us?
Yeah, that's a statistical question. I mean, what we did was analyze this in a statistical sense, and we didn't do what you're talking about as sort of a time of emergence analysis.
Yeah.
And that gets a little bit more complicated because it's a matter of extracting a signal from the background noise or variability of the system. What we have done is said that by 2050, it's very likely that the drought conditions through these regions will be associated with climate change and be sending the system in a significantly drier direction than currently we exist in.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Jason Smurden, who is a co-author of a paper and an associate research professor at Lamont Doherty, talking about a mega drought that is scheduled to happen, according to prediction, about 2050. Is global warming, let's look at what's happening now, talk a bit about that. The current drought in California and Texas, do we attribute that to global warming?
All the research to this point suggests no, it's not something that's attributable to global warming. The best we can say is that these kinds of droughts will become more frequent and more persistent as a consequence of increasing greenhouse gases as we move into the 21st century.
Mm-hmm. So that would be making the mistake of pointing to any one thing.
Yeah, this event contribution is difficult. Everybody asks this question, is this the consequence? Well, these events happen independent of our perturbations to the climate. So there's this background variability within a system that's hard to separate out these causes. But we can, from these kinds of studies that we've just published, say also without a doubt that things are going to get worse and move towards a drier state into the future.
Let me see if I can get a question in quickly. Let's go to Boulder, Colorado. Kurt, hi, welcome to Science Friday. Hey there. Kurt, are you there?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. My phone glitched for a second. I was talking to your screener, so I might have missed the answer to my question. When you asked him about the climate model or what how the scientific basis, you said You said climate models and plus, and there's a blank there, and I'm guessing it's dendrochronology for the historical record.
All right, let me ask him. That's a nice word for tonight.
So, yeah, Kurt, you're right. So for the background, historical estimates reaching over the last 1,000 years, we use tree ring-derived reconstructions of past drought variability.
Mm-hmm. And that's like the standard way of looking at.
It is one of the standard ways. So, you know, this high-resolution paleoclimatology that people look at over the last several thousand years, tree rings are an important component of that. But these mega droughts are seen in records of lake levels, in things known as speleothems or cave formations that are used to look at these past epochs. So they're, it's a signal that's well expressed in a lot of different records.
What is the definition of when a drought turns into a mega drought? What's the line there?
There's not a hard and fast line, but it's really something that we associate with time. So it's one of these multi-decadal events that happens for decades after decades relative to something that might happen for just 1 or 2 years.
So when you have a mega drought, it could be 2, 3, 4, 5 or more decades. Could this one go on more than 5 decades? You're projecting 5 decades here?
So we look in the last 50 years, but as long as the CO2 levels remain elevated in the atmosphere, this state of dryness is something to expect. So
this is not a reversible thing.
It's reversible through our actions if we take action to mitigate the CO2 levels, but it's not reversible in the sense that once the climate is exposed to those levels of CO2, that's how long we'll last.
All right, Jason, thanks for the good news.
My apologies.
Jason Smerdon is an associate research professor at the Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory at Columbia University, and a paper published. Where can we read it if we want to read the paper?
You can find it online. Science Advances in an online journal. It was published yesterday.
There you go. Thanks, Jason, for taking time to be with us.
Thank you, Ira.